What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. And Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman. And
I'm Woody Overton.
We always tell them we're going to give them something different,
something
right?
Something different in all aspects of Angola, from the good to the bad, from the most horrible to the most uplifting. And I think today it certainly qualifies as probably the most uplifting episode.
I would definitely agree with that.
It's in totality.
Yeah,
it's a really, really, you know, born out of tragedy is basically a daily miracle.
You got that right, and so brace yourself because this story will get you. As a matter of fact, I do want to mention before we even get started that the way I met this gentleman was through P2P, which is another podcast that Scott Huffman's been on our show.
Penitentiary Penthouse Show.
Yes. And met this gentleman through them and was just absolutely blown away by his story. And he's agreed to come on today and kind of tell it and talk about the great things he's doing with his Second Chance. And so we want to welcome you, Andrew Hundley, to Bloody Angola.
Thank you for having me.
Andrew, I told you just briefly before we started, I want the people to know who you are, good, bad, and indifferent. But the world needs more people like you, right? And everybody knows I'm an old homicide detective, and you'd think I'd be all hard ass on, you know, prison and stuff like that, but I'm not. I believe in people and people's stories. So if tell me where you grew up and just tell your story, and I'm going to interrupt you a lot and ask a lot of questions, because if I don't, it'll just slip my brain. You
know? Sure. And in 1981, I was born at Opelousas General Hospital.
Opelousas got some yeah. Billy's boot.
Cajun country.
Really?
Yeah. My parents lived in Eunice, but
the home of the purple peacock.
Opelousas had the best local hospital at the time, and right. That's where my mom wanted to deliver me. Grew up, middle son, older sister, younger sister to loving parents, and grew up in Eunice, and just sort of had the normal life of a kid from Cajun country.
I probably passed you a couple times on my way to the Purple Peacock. A lot older than you are. So.
Well, and I can hear even in your voice, you've got that kind of accent. My wife's family is from Arnerville area, so I kind of pick up a little bit of that Opelousas slang, I guess you could say, from your childhood. And growing up, just normal?
Normal childhood. I was a good student. You know, student athlete, loved to play basketball, loved to hunt with my dad.
Awesome.
And
yeah, tall guy. You're what, 6'3"?
6'3". I was, 6'3" whenever I was 12, 13 years old.
Oh, wow.
Thought I was going to be 7 feet tall. Yeah. Just had my growth spurt early.
Right. Yeah. All the basketball coaches were like, oh, yeah, you're playing basketball.
Yeah, just had a normal childhood. And, I turned 15 years old. It was the summer between my sophomore and junior year in high school, and starting to grow up, and starting to want to experience different things.
Right.
For the first time in that summer, I had a pretty quick burnout. Started hanging around with different people. Started using drugs. Started drinking more. Went pretty quick, and
that's a pivotal time.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Hey, I was pretty hardcore.
it's
a growth stage, and your brain's not mentally fully developed,
and everything's going crazy at that time in your life. I mean, hormones, questions. You don't really, fitting in is a big thing at that point in everybody's life,
and you certainly experiment with different things that you really don't even have any fucking clue,
right?
What could happen? So
yeah. So, everything's kind of rocking and rolling, but you start going down this path, maybe just at that point.
Yeah, July of 1997, 15 years old. Worst night of my life.
Yeah.
Out with friends earlier that night. the night ends with me killing a 14-year-old. That was the first and only time I ever did PCP in my life.
Yeah,
didn't
evolution it, Jim.
Didn't know what I was putting in my body. A brother of a friend of ours gave us a joint laced with it. I smoked it, and what I can say is I've never felt the way that I've felt that night, and never experienced the rage that I felt that night. And I ended up taking someone's life. It's a crime that I continue to be remorseful and ashamed of. I look back and I don't even recognize the person I was that night. When I committed the crime, I take full responsibility for it. Yeah. I'm ashamed of the way it transpired. I recognize that that I caused great harm, not only to Terry Pete and her family, and the community, my family. And as I often say, I threw, I learned in prison to think of crime as a rock hitting a body of water, and there's a ripple effect,
right.
And the ripple affects so many people. And what I did is I threw a boulder into a small pond,
right.
And that pond will never be the same.
Right. Wow, that's a great analogy.
You know, Andrew, I talk about it all the time, and you know, we always say our hearts go out to the victims' families, et cetera. But you know what? And they do. But what most people don't realize, and I've had to deal with it over the years, is the offenders' families get destroyed also. And everyone who loves everybody on both sides, you know. So
I can tell you that I was arrested the evening after it happened. Cops, homicide detectives come to my house knocking on the door. And tell my parents, we need you to bring your son to the police station. And, you know, my parents are thinking, what does Andrew know about something someone else did? And I remember.
There was never a thought of, he did something.
He did something.
It was he knows somebody that did something.
And you know, I think initially I'm going into the police station and I'm telling myself, I'm not going to say anything. And then I have this moment where I tell myself, I'm going to tell them what happened. And we get into the room where the interrogation's going to be. And I tell the cops, please have my mom leave the room because I didn't want my mom to hear what I was about to say. And I feel horrible. I put all that pressure on my dad, who didn't know what I was about to say.
Right.
And then after I confessed, it was my dad's job then to leave the room and tell my mom, who was angry because why the heck did her son tell her to leave the room? And then all of a sudden my dad has to go tell her that, you know, Andrew's killed someone and he's arrested for murder.
Wow. So just what you were talking about there, Woody, there's victims on both sides of that spectrum. And you came from a good family. Anything abnormal.
No, I can't say that I'm the first person in my family to graduate college, but I am the first person in my family to go to the penitentiary.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Definitely. And so you're 15 and,
that's, you know,
and wrap your mind around that time, first of all, folks.
Jeez. For that time, it really, I don't know what the numbers are because I was a detective at that time, but I'm thinking I was in law enforcement at the time. I can't really think of many people that we charged at 15 or sent them to the big house, right? And then most of them went to, you know,
got they were charged as juveniles.
Juvenile life. And,
Was there a time where they were debating, should we charge them as a juvenile or an adult, that sort of thing?
You know, my recollection is there was about a week that passed. The district attorney, and this was in Acadia Parish, you know, brought it to a grand jury, and a grand jury chose to indict me as an adult for second degree murder.
I'm sure that is, I hate to say it in this case, but I'm sure we call an ape an acute political emergency also because of the outrage in the community of the crime. But that's certainly worth mentioning. I mean, they had to feel so strongly about it. It's not like you were running frequent flyer thug with them, right? And then you messed up, and then they really threw the book at you.
Yeah, and I think it's important to mention the difference between a 15-year-old mind and a 25-year-old mind.
Yeah, even though you were 6'3", your brain wasn't fully developed.
No, and you actually have something. It's called a prefrontal cortex, and that's basically, for you listeners out there, it's the area that's located in the front of your brain. And science proves that this does not mature until the age of 25. Now, that prefrontal cortex is responsible for kind of your planning aspect of your brain and your executive functioning. So basically what it means is your understanding of consequences is not that as mature as a 25-year-old's would be with that prefrontal cortex. So while you know right from wrong, and you understand right from wrong at 15, and all of us can think back to 15, most people don't grasp this consequence is going to dictate the rest of my life.
Yeah, but you got it.
Life seems like forever then.
Right. But you got to add into that PCP.
Oh, yeah.
Is the worst shit ever made. And
never done
I've
it?
I've dealt with it.
I've heard stories that made me not want to do
that. And you were right. You said you didn't recognize who you were that night. I've dealt with people who were on it, and then when they were off it, right? Totally different people.
Yeah, and
it's not an excuse. You made your decision, and she's no longer on the planet, but you're owning up to it.
Hey, that's right. And I would ask you, you mentioned rage, and so were you, and you mentioned you didn't recognize that. That wasn't a part of your personality per se. And so I would imagine before this took place, pretty laid back guy, probably.
Yeah.
Sounds like.
It wasn't a guy that gotten, a lot of fights.
Well, at 6'3", many people didn't mess with you likely.
may throw elbows on a basketball court, right. But there's a referee there to. I was a chill guy. I was a friendly guy, and certainly, wasn't exposed to violence at my home or in school. So this was, the first time I had struck somebody.
Yeah.
In my life.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, did you go to trial or?
Went to trial was
because I would assume I'm going to interrupt you that they could come back and they're only going to do you as an adult at 15. Right. Then you've got nothing to lose, even though confessed. No defense attorney is going to plead their client to life in prison.
That's right, and continue to be immature and there's this youthfulness and having. An attorney, which, looking back, not trashing him, I had to be held responsible for my actions. But, I'm awaiting trial. I'm a teenager who's scared to go to prison.
Right.
How do I beat the criminal justice system?
Right.
How can I get off on trial? I was ultimately convicted of a jury and sentenced to the one sentence that Louisiana can give for second degree murder,
right.
And that's mandatory life without parole.
That's right, and so we're going to get into that more later on. But I always say, a lot of other states, life doesn't mean life,
that's
right?
Correct.
After 20 years, 30 years, whatever, they get a shot at parole. Louisiana, second degree, that's it.
Is Louisiana unique in that, or is
Louisiana really? Is an outlier. Is the only state and the frequency in which we hand out the sentence certainly makes us an outlier. Other states, even other southern states, judges have a discretion on, can they give you a low end where you either have an out date or you have parole eligibility at some point.
Like a 25 to life.
25 to life, 30 to life, yeah. 40 to life, Louisiana, life means life.
Life means life, and... there's no leeway or discretion in the judge or anybody else sentencing. I mean, you get it. That's why you take it to trial, because, you're praying. The only other deal would be if they charge with first degree murder and the death penalty is on the table as an option. And they do that a lot of times just so they'll take the plea for life, right? That's
correct.
The only way you're going to plead to life.
I can tell you when the judge sentenced me after I was convicted, his words were, "I'm sorry for what I have to do, but the state of Louisiana only gives me one sentence that I can give you."
Yeah. Wow.
Let me ask you just a real hard question. If you can remember, you don't have to answer if you don't want to. When the judge is sentencing you, what's going on in that young brain of yours?
So I think part of what saved me and saved my mental health was that I was a dumb young kid whose brain wasn't developed.
Kind of living in the moment.
And I had this, youthful, naive mindset that, okay, they're saying life, and they're saying life means life, but that can't be what it means. Right. You know, there's going to be some way I overcome this. And what happens is, after several years in prison, I mature, I find a way, I find a routine, I find purpose in my life while I was in prison. And by the time my brain matured and I recognized, wait a minute, everyone else here who was sentenced to life isn't going home, whenever the light bulb finally went off that I'm likely going to die in prison, I had matured enough to the point where I could handle that.
Whereas, yeah, you had acclimated.
I had acclimated, whereas I think as a child, which I was still a child when I went to prison, a child who committed a monstrous act, but still a child and still a child's brain, I didn't accept and didn't quite comprehend what that life sentence would be. So I think if I would have, I would have gone to prison a totally different person.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, not jumping the gun, but why we actually see this Buck's conventional wisdom, people who go to prison, who get in trouble at a young age, actually have a great propensity to change because they haven't finished developing. And I think that's what happened in my case was I didn't know what I was getting into, but once I started to develop, I attained this quality of life, attained skills that I didn't have. I rebuilt my life.
You did your time. You didn't let your time be you.
No, right. I did my time.
Right.
Well, and I'll tell you one thing with what you just said. What I'm hearing from that is when you're young and you get sentenced to a sentence like that, you haven't necessarily lived enough life to realize what you just gave up.
Exactly.
And so if you're 27 and you do that and you've got two kids and a wife and you know, a job, and that happens, it's a totally different reaction in your mind.
I'll tell you, the guys that do the worst time are guys that have kids at home, guys that have a wife or a girlfriend, because their mind is on the outside.
Right.
And the way to do time is to think about the inside.
Yeah.
Don't think about the outside world. Think about the inside.
It'll drive you crazy.
Telling you, guys that have, especially young children or older children that are having their own problems and they feel helpless, those are the guys that don't do good time. Those are the guys that succumb to the environment.
It's crazy.
That's interesting as hell to me.
Right?
Yeah. And it makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, because then you feel like you can't do for them, you can't protect them, or you let them down, or whatever.
Crazy. Yeah.
So you get sentenced. You go to prison. I put a lot of people in prison. I've never put not a 15-year-old for life. What is it like? You go in and you get inside. I'm sure you went to Hunts or somewhere first and got up. You tell me, so what's it? What do you think? Especially, and I'm not being racist, you know, this is the fact, the ratio of racist or ethnicity, right? And you go in as a young white male, holy shit.
I was scared to death. Watched enough TV to know what what media portrays prison to be like.
Right.
Heard enough about the Louisiana prison system, to know how dangerous of a place it was. They actually started me off that I remember the warden after I was sentenced. The warden and the sheriff coming in to talk to me. And you know, one thing I have a really good attitude towards law enforcement, because law enforcement didn't put me in prison. Right, law enforcement didn't. I did. They were doing their job. And I had good interactions where, you know, I had a warden and a sheriff come in and they were empathizing with me because they knew what I was about to get into. And they come in and say, look, tomorrow, you know, we're not supposed to say, but just want to let you know, we're going to be putting you in a transport vehicle tomorrow and moving you to a state prison. I said, okay, where am I going? And they said, well, we're bringing you to a place in Houma. I said, okay. And so I knew whenever the van left the parish prison, you know, after a little while, I know what direction Houma is in, and we're going north. And I, after, you know, I'm scared to say anything, but then I asked the transportation officer, where are we going? I thought we're going to Houma. He said, no, Homer.
Oh.
which is almost in Arkansas. Yeah. So I thought I was going south to the bayou somewhere. And we're going to north, you know, going to, I didn't even know there was a Homer, Louisiana. Right. And they say, yeah, there's a state prison. And it's a, you know, it's a 4-hour drive from my home.
Right.
Get there. And I remember the warden of the facilities waiting on me. And, you know, I remember he gives me a speech. And, you know, he's waiting on me because I'm this kid that's going into his prison. And he says, do you have any questions for me? And I said, yeah, should I look to start, you know, to fight as soon as someone messes with me? I remember he says, man, if that's the attitude you have, you're going to get in fights.
Right.
Don't look for fights. Because, like, I was waiting to, like, just punch the first guy.
Yeah.
Because, like, the advice I'm getting from these guys at the parish jail, who now I realize, like, none of these guys really did any time.
Exactly.
They're messing with you. They're, like, telling me, man, you go find the biggest guy and you punch
knock
him
out,
and you get the respect. So, yeah, I was, you know, worried about getting raped. I was thinking I would have to fight to protect myself. And, you know, while there, what I can be honest with you, what helped me first going in there is immediately the other guys who were there that went in as children immediately came to me and took me under their wings. And, you know, I can remember the first time I was thinking about getting a tattoo. I didn't have a tattoo when I went into prison.
Right.
Today, I still don't have a tattoo, but I was about to get the first tattoo. And a guy who was a juvenile when he got his life sentence and had been there for 5 years, and he had tattoos all over his arms, on his neck, and he told me, man, don't get it, because as soon as you get it, you're going to keep getting them.
Right.
And look, they look like crap.
Yeah.
And he says, the people are going to judge you. He's like, you have this image. Keep this like golden image, because that's what everyone looks at you and, you know, thinks you're a square. Like, keep that image.
Right.
And, like, that impacted me getting, you know, hell, this is a guy that's like me that I can look up to. And, like, I get it. If I wouldn't have taken that advice, I probably would have changed my image, and I would regret having these horrible prison tattoos today.
Wow.
And
that's crazy.
I
never got one.
Never got one. I remember the first time that I got into conflict with a guy that I was scared of, and then listening to other guys saying, I don't mess with that guy. He keeps iron buried on the yard.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, and then I had to ask, well, what does that mean? You know, he has shanks out in the yard. So I remember going to another juvenile lifer who had been there for about 10, 15 years and thinking, you know, this is I've known this guy for a couple months. You know, he's a welder. I go to him, I was like, hey, I need a piece of metal, like, to have in case. And I remember him telling me, and, you know, at no point had he ever shown any anger or aggression to me. And he like, pulls me in close, and he says, if you ever ask me anything like that again, like, you're dead to me.
Yeah.
He's like, you're so stupid. People, if you get a weapon, you're going to use
a weapon, absolutely.
And it's, like, the same thing.
Wow.
I was like, okay, and that peer pressure, I didn't, you know, I looked up to these other guys that I realized had the same lived experience I had, and I didn't want to disappoint them.
Yeah.
And, like, early on, that's what kept me on the right track, and having these, you know, big brothers, you know, it kept me.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Insulated, where people really didn't mess with me.
Yeah. Dang. That's crazy. That's, that, you know, and you did. You went in there. You had no idea what to expect. All you knew of was what you saw on TV, right, which is Hollywood a lot of times. But Homer was, and how long were you in Homer?
I was in Homer for my first few years.
Yeah.
Before I transferred down south. Just if I could make one more point.
Yeah, absolutely.
As far as like the fear of being raped, which right, I think is like any man goes to prison no matter how big of a guy he is.
Right.
He's scared of it because right, I've seen the biggest guy come in and, you know, prison jargon get turned out.
I've seen it. See, I'm ex-correction officer also.
And it's, it's all psychological.
Right.
And, I went in worried someone's going to try to penetrate me.
Right.
And I was there a few weeks and I was like, no one's trying to rape me. They're actually, it's actually the opposite.
Yeah.
They called me Tenderoni. It was like I was, they wanted me, to have sex with them and not the other way around.
Yeah.
So I was like, and what I learned is, it's psychological and, if I was strong enough not to get involved in the prison games, not to say that, people aren't, that there is violence in prison. There continues to be violence today, although, whenever I first went in 20 something years ago, it still was a more dangerous place right, than it is today. But there, what I learned early on, mind your business. Don't get caught up in, stay away from, they tell you, stay away from another guy's old lady in prison.
Yeah.
Don't get involved right, in, inner relationships, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't get involved in gambling. Don't get involved, right, mind your business and mostly that's true. And I carried myself, in a way that I think people weren't looking for reasons to mess with me.
Yeah. And you put in from a, I guess you'd say an administrative standpoint in prison, you probably kind of stood out versus your typical, what you would think of as convict, right? I mean, you're even though you were young when you went in, you speak with an education.
Right. I was, the first job I had was, cleaning up as a juvenile. They had me segregated in a unit. I was actually at this prison in Homer, which is David Wade Correctional mm-hmm. Center. It's, most police officers, corrections right, officers, high profile people right, who get sent to DOC get sent to this unit at David Wade. And so that's where they sent me. And it's actually the worst time I ever did. You think it's like a 50 man unit, all alpha personalities.
Right.
And this kid shows up and everyone, has advice for the kid that shows up. So it was really, it was the other juvenile lifers I was around were really good influences. Not so much some of the other people, but the first job they gave me was at night because they didn't want me around the rest of the population. They had me going in the kitchen at night and cleaning tables and mopping. And after I did that for several months, I had a lieutenant came by and is actually a black man. And as you said, most people in prison are black. And I was an outlier here. And I was a white kid, but didn't look even like the other white guys that
right,
were there.
Right.
So this lieutenant sees me, and I think he just saw something in me. And one night he stops me and says, "Do you know how to type?" I said, "Yeah, I know how to type." He says, "I got a job for you." He says, "If you can keep your mouth shut." I said, "I can keep my mouth shut." So he got me a job as the clerk for the night shift security office. Wow. And so what I was doing was I was typing use of force reports, typing disciplinary reports, just typing occurrence reports for security that worked at night. And so that was just this one officer that saw something in me and wanted to give me a chance really affected me because it, working around security, which is usually like a taboo thing.
Right.
You don't work right, for the man. If you work for the man, you're a rat.
Right.
I think people gave me leeway because they saw me as a kid that really didn't know a lot about it. But I learned from like sort of a security perspective, how they think,
yeah,
how they see everyone. And it helped me for the rest of my incarceration, where I understood, like, hey, if I'm dealing with a free man, I know better how they think. I know how I know what their processes are. So I was just really lucky early on having these privileges, not just the way I looked, but opportunities that educated me about prison life.
Very, very.
Like God used so many different people, man. The best sides, even like the welder, you said, and you're like, hey, dude, yeah, you'd be dead to me if you ever asked for that again. And the CO just made a little piece of Jesus and said, hey, let me give this kid a shot, right? And then you're able to take that, because at some point, I would assume after you're 21, they ship you.
Yep.
And so you're better prepared for where you go next, which is
Dixon Correctional.
That's where I worked at.
D.C.
I mean, of course, I trained at Angola, but Burl Kane was actually my warden. Yeah. And then so I ran the first Rec Room A, and then I got it. Doesn't matter. Yep. Then Burl Kane sent me to work in cell block. So I had two tiers of work, WCB, and then two tiers of admin say.
So now you're headed there, and what's the thought process?
Well, it's a new place. You know, I asked to be closer to home.
Right.
And still at that point, trying to avoid Angola.
Yeah.
But I end up at Dixon Correctional Institute, and, I'm there, for several years. This is a point now I'm in my, early 20s. And, I'm maturing. I still have, the immaturity that any 20-year-old has.
Sure.
But growing up, understanding more, got there, and there were a lot of programs, got involved in Toastmasters, got involved in the boxing program.
Yeah.
We just did an episode on Etienne. The Black Crime.
I had him on my cell block on the WCB with a white guy from the LP that was the celly.
So I realized I wasn't a boxer, but what I was really good at was sort of managing the team.
Right.
And then there's an association, a prison boxing association. Right. So we would travel, and then I ended up getting the response. We'd weigh guys in, we'd match them up.
That's love.
People don't understand
how big the boxing program is.
It's huge, and there are guys out today. Some of the guys have gotten out and not had the stardom that ATN had, but were able to box. But it gave so many guys, a different perspective and character.
From Plaquemine, it was on the Contender. I mean, he was down. Actually, I think he was
a good boxer.
Yeah, he was a great boxer.
Not Hassan Henderson.
No. It's I can't think of it.
From Plaquemine.
But anyway, he fought on the Contender, and I don't think he's fought in the last couple of years. But he was
Eric Johnson. Babyface Assassin.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's it.
And so many of those guys that were successful. Actually, they were juveniles when they went in.
Right.
Actually,
he was a juvenile.
So Babyface and I started at Wade together.
He was really?
Oh, come on.
Really?
At Wade, and he came to DCI before me. I followed him. And, they got at DCI, they have a youthful offender program, 15, 16-year-olds, not lifers. But and they had a warden there, Larry Eichard, assistant warden that was over the boxing team. And he was so smart, he'd go get these kids out the program and start training them.
Right.
They were really raw, but they would listen to the trainers because they were kids.
And they give them something to focus on besides the bullshit that's going on, right?
So those guys, even the ones that come home, Eric, they may not be boxing today, but, that gave them a pathway, something to do, positive energy, gave them discipline.
Hope.
Yeah.
And before we go any further, I want to mention this because you can certainly speak to it. But Woody has mentioned this several times, as well as Kelly Jennings, who has her own podcast, but is a guest of ours frequently. And that is the most important thing from an administrative standpoint to give to any prisoner, any convict, is hope. Because without that, you have no control.
Well, it speaks to what he said earlier about the older people coming in with the families and the kids and stuff like that. They're focused on the outside. They're not focusing on anything positive. There's no hope.
Yeah.
They're thinking.
Well, and one unique thing you did when you went to DCI was you started getting involved in a lot of programs. And you mentioned Toastmasters. What is that for those?
So we say it's a leadership and communication organization. It's a public, it helps you with public speaking.
Awesome.
So there are people who are terrified of speaking that get in it and learn how to speak. And then there are people like me who think that they're better speakers than
I can relate.
And it helps us refine our skill, not say as many us, or try to disguise our accent sometimes.
Yeah.
But it gave me an avenue to focus on. And like all this time, I'm taking college courses.
Right.
I'm improving my education. I started working for the warden.
Right.
And that gave me an opportunity. I say that what I practice today is servant leadership. Yeah. And I always try to think of my role as a leader as how can I help others, not how society can serve me, but how I can serve others. And where I sort of developed that, I think I had that personality when I was a kid, but working for the warden, everyone always, needs help.
Yeah,
in prison. Right. And you were someone that could go
a conduit.
You can do like, hey, I don't get involved in it, or you can be a conduit. Right. Or you can be the shady guy who does favors and ends up getting in trouble and gets booted out. But I was the conduit, and I would help people. And I would help other young guys coming in. I would help old timers. And it's just sort of something I was good at. The administration trusted me when I brought something that I wasn't trying to help someone.
You brought some stuff that was legit.
That wasn't personal gain for me. Right. So I think the long story short was that's sort of where I developed the skill for what I do today how can I use whatever influence I have to benefit people who need help.
Yeah. And it's a unique experience. And I would even add to that, at that time in your life, it was the education aspect, not only that helped pass, let's face it, pass the time, but also gave you hope that even though you were sentenced to life with no parole, I don't know if at this point it had clicked yet, or if you were one of these people that always had that positive attitude that, hey, I'm going to appeal this or appeal that, or something's going to change.
There's when you get a life sentence, there's one mandatory appeal. And it happened. And after it happened, I never filed another appeal.
Wow.
Just really early on. And I look back and I was like, man, I did wise things. I don't know how wise I was then, but I made a lot of good decisions, because if I would have got caught up with appeal, don't take responsibility, because if you take responsibility, then you may not have a shot for a court to. And I just was like, man, I'm going to do my time, and I'm going to figure, I'm not going to worry about the BS. And
what you can control.
Well, by that time, I really just wanted to say, like, hey, I don't want to be, after being in prison for a really short time, like a couple months, I saw a big difference between the guys that, just were cynical and like the system messed over me, right, and I didn't do it.
Bad, right?
It got me bad. Yeah. And the guys that were like, man, I did what I did and I'm taking my lick. Like those guys just seemed so peaceful. So I was like, I want to be one of those guys.
You're focusing all your energy on the pills and they got me bad and all that, then you wouldn't have the energy to put into the boxing program or working with the warden or the public speaking.
Courses.
Yeah.
Educating myself.
Didn't you get like 40 hours there or something?
Yeah, I ended up earning actually more than that, but I earned, like, I was able to eventually transfer 40 hours whenever I left prison.
Right. Well, so yeah, it could have been.
Which is a heck of a start.
I couldn't earn, I wasn't able to earn a degree, but thankfully, all those Englishes and maths.
All the stuff you don't want to take.
Biology
wanted to.
You get them while you're down, right? They had a captive audience.
So, the guys that are stuck in the law library, and look, power to them, because there are innocent people in prison.
I
get it. But, like, that becomes a full-time job and an obsession. And those guys that go down that rabbit hole, they stay down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So in DCI and you're doing the right things, you're getting involved in.
But one thing is when you're at what guys in prison would call satellite camps, they're state prisons.
Yeah.
But, they don't really make lifers trustees, especially young lifer,
Really? Okay. Yeah.
So to be a trustee at Angola is a totally different criteria than being a trustee everywhere else.
Right. Yeah. Angola is 10 years before you get considered, right?
Right. But everywhere else, if you're a lifer, they're not making trustees at DCI, at Hunt. They're not making you a trustee based really on what your behavior is or how it's based on how much time you have left.
Right.
Because the thought process is short-termers
have less chance.
Aren't going to escape.
Right. Yeah.
Long-termers are going to escape. At Angola, everyone's a long-termer.
Hey, yeah.
True. So the outlook. So going to Angola was an opportunity to become a trustee. And, after being, at a couple of prisons, but, wanting to, I want to feel like, I'm free. And everyone knows, by that time, I'm not scared of it. I've done enough time where I'm like, I can go somewhere and I can, even to the bloodiest prison in America, I can go and figure out how to, to stay above the violence and to be involved in positive things. So I knew going to Angola would give me the opportunity to be a trustee.
Now, before you went to Angola, wasn't there a point where you worked for the Louisiana State Police headquarters?
Yes. So before I was at State Police headquarters for a few years. I actually worked at the Jez Tech facility.
Yeah, that's the training. I retired from State Police.
Yeah, so I worked at Jez Tech, worked for the administration.
Did you stay at the barracks
at the Jez Tech? Yeah, I stayed at the barracks.
Yeah. This is a great story, by the way.
Yeah, got my only write-up that I had in my entire incarceration at the barracks, and it was an unauthorized female visitor.
Really? Yeah. Tell me about this one. I got to hear this.
If anything's worth a write-up, that is.
I'm going to sing. Is that a high court?
That's a high court write-up. It's a rule 30, and I forget the initial, but the rule is no unauthorized female visitors on the premises, and people, may say, at the office where I worked, there was a female visitor. So I had to, I was told, hey, you can't stay here. You can't stay here. So at that point I knew, after having done, been in a satellite places, but I can't be a trustee.
Jez Tech is a state police training facility, but actually they make a whole, they have like a hotel out there and stuff, and they where they get all the federal employees to come in and train on everything from the postmasters to whatever. They have the high speed driving track, and I mean it's a really impressive thing. But they make a lot of their money off the these corporations and the feds, pay so much for this. It's a world class training facility, but I don't know how big the compound, I guess you would call it a compound, but inside that is a mini prison, a satellite camp is what it's called. Tell us about that.
It's a dormitory. You imagine it's two dorms in one big building. If you imagine army barracks, keep that in mind. And it's actually cubicles. These are state prisoners who are working for state police. Some of them are, a lot of them are mechanics, body shop guys.
Right. Wow. They do everything.
It gives the state savings because, you have convicts working on vehicles.
Yeah. You're not going to Jiffy Lube.
The guys that do the grass maintenance at the state police headquarters.
Right. That's where I was.
The electricians,
they have even the automotive guys at state police headquarters used to service my units.
Yeah.
It was convicts.
Okay. Yeah.
And the guys who work at the governor's mansion.
Right. That's,
live at the state police barracks. You got a guy who works at the airport for taking care of state police's helicopter. And then I worked for the commander, which was the equivalent of the warden, doing administrative stuff, still doing what I'm good at, helping other guys.
Corey Holmes, His daddy's been out there for like 39 years, and I can't think of his daddy's first name because I'm
John.
Bad. John Holmes. Yeah, yeah.
Chris. So
I think Corey's a twin, and then their dad's been out there for like 39 years. I can see his face right now, but I'm bad with names. But what did you know him? What did he do?
He's a lieutenant. He's a supervisor at the barracks.
That's right. Save it. I thought it at the house. Yeah. So that's
and how did those So in my mind, obviously I don't have your experience. I don't have Woody's experience. So I have the general listener's experience. So I'd ask this question, which is, okay, you've got police and convicts, and they're working side by side. How was that relationship? Was it like a normal type thing that you would have with anybody you worked with, or was it? I'm sure you had your assholes just like anywhere else.
Yeah, no, surprisingly, a lot of there's a lot of respect on both sides. One, it's a zero tolerance place, obviously. Yeah. So if you screw up, that you're going to be gone. Swing, yeah. But troopers are pretty professional, and
you don't have to. And I always said this: the whatever you're in for, your job, even as a correctional officer, is not to punish them for what their crime they did on the outside. Right? It's to keep society's safe, or keep from escaping and doing whatever. You're not there to punish them. And to me, and I know I wasn't doing the kind of time y'all were doing, especially when I was a CO. I mean, but you're there 12 hours a night, and a lot of times 30 times a month because it was shorthanded. But I developed relationships. You're not supposed to, but as long as they gave me respect, I gave them respect.
Yeah.
And I say this the day I die. A lot of the convicts, and there's a difference between convict and inmate. A lot of the convicts were better than some of the free people I worked with.
What's the difference between convict and inmate?
An inmate's a young buck that starts doing all the trouble, doing the fights, the drugs, the rapes and stuff like you could tell.
Yeah, convicts, the guy.
Convicts down doing their time.
Convicts doing time.
Right.
Gotcha. And convicts, he understands, how to do his time. He understands how not to get involved in the BS.
Yeah, they don't want anything to interrupt the routine, take away the privileges, right?
Right. So, it's all about you. You know, most guys who've been at Angola for a long time, they've been on the same job for a long time.
Right.
Because it's all about routine. He's probably been working for the same free man for a long time.
Right.
They have respect. You know, you don't want change.
Right.
You want to know every morning when you wake up, because when guys first went to Angola, they don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
You know, there's turmoil. They want that peace of mind. And so that's what most of your convicts or trustees, because they figured out how to get the best quality of life possible, even while they're doing a life sentence.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And that's what I told you before. Like if you get a young CO or whatever goes down in, search is a part of prison life, right? But there's a different way you do it. If you're going in a footlocker and you're dumping out all their shit and disrespecting their shit, they're probably going to buck up. But if you do it, you got to do your job. If you do it respectfully, but you still do your job, then you get that respect back.
Absolutely.
It's all about respect.
Love that. And I think what we can do, so Andrew's we're at the point of the story where he's going in Angola.
Right.
And
what I told, I told Andrew ahead of time, I said, I just want to get in there and get behind the microphone because you never know what's going to come out.
Yeah.
And this episode has been absolute fire. And Andrew has agreed
to do a second episode.
Right. To stay with us.
On the spot.
Y'all,
we put the pressure on.
You haven't heard anything yet. I got guy bumps right now talking about it.
Yeah, we haven't even got into the amazing part.
What's coming next. So, it's fire.
Yep.
We hope it will open your hearts and minds to the work that's being done and the goodness that's coming out of horrible tragedies.
That's right.
And so stay tuned for part two.
Part two.
Got to give them a name for it.
Yeah, what are we? What
do you think you're going to name it, Andrew?
You know, our tagline at Parole Project is believe in second chances.
All right. We're going to call it that. Second chances.
Yeah. Second chances.
So, y'all, we're going to name this episode Second Chances. and stay tuned for part two of Second Chances.
And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
And I want to say thank you, Andrew.
Yes, thank you, Andrew. And Appreciate you.
Thank you for staying there for the next one, which we're doing right now. But you're Jim Chapman, and I'm Woody Overton.
Your host of Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
The complete story of America's bloodiest prisons.
Peace!
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. And Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.